But on the third night, he disappeared into the forest once more, all alone, as if to go in search of himself. And on the fourth night, he went out with the robbers again. Batista had sung Risa the songs that were going around Ombra after Mo's venture into the city. The blue jay had flown away, said the songs, escaping on the back of the milksop's best horse. It was said that he had killed 10 guards, imprisoned Sootbird in the vault, and stolen Balbulus's finest books. How much of it is true? She had asked Mo. He laughed. I'm afraid I can't be said to have flown, he had whispered, caressing her belly in which their child was slowly growing. And then he had gone out with the Black Prince again. And she lay there, night after night, listening to the songs Batista sang outside the tent, terrified for her husband. The Black Prince had had two tents pitched for them right beside his own. They were patched together from old clothes that the robbers had dyed with oak bark, so that they wouldn't show up too much among the surrounding trees. One tent for Meggie, one for the blue jay and his wife. The mats of dried moss on which they slept were damp, and when Mo went out at night, Risa shared the tent with her daughter for warmth. One day the grass was so white with hoarfrost in the morning that you could see the glass men's tracks in it. This will be a hard winter, said the strong man, not for the first time. One could still find giant's footsteps in the ravine where the camp lay. The rain of the last few weeks had turned them into ponds where gold-spotted frogs swam. The trees on the slopes of the ravine rose to the sky, almost as tall as the trees in the Wayless Wood. Their withering leaves covered the ground, which was cool now in autumn, with gold and flaming red, and fairies' nests hung among the branches like overripe fruit. If you looked south, you could see a village in the distance, its walls showing pale as mushrooms between the trees. But it was such a poor village that even the milksop's greedy tax-gatherers didn't bother to come this way. Wolves howled by night in the surrounding woods. Pale grey owls, like little ghosts, flew over the shabby tents. And horned squirrels stole what food there was to steal among the campfires. There were a good 50 men living in the camp, sometimes more. The youngest were the two boys saved from hanging by Snapper, and now they both went spying for the prince. Doria, the strong man's brother, who brought Meggie wildflowers, and his orphan friend, Luke. Luke helped Gecko to tame his crows. 6 women cooked and mended for the robbers, but none of them went out at night with the men. Risa drew portraits of almost all of them, boys, men, and women. Batista had found paper and chalk for her. Where, he didn't say. She wondered as she portrayed every face, if the lines on them had indeed been drawn by Fenolio's words alone, or whether they weren't perhaps, after all, living their own lives in this world independently of the old man. The women did not even join the men when they sat together talking. Risa always sensed the disapproving looks when she and Meggie sat down quite naturally with Mo and the Black Prince. Sometimes she returned those glances, staring Snapper in the face, and Gecko, and all the others who tolerated women in the camp, only to cook food and mend clothes. She cursed the nausea that kept coming back, and prevented her from at least going with Mo when he and the prince walked in the surrounding hills, looking for a place offering better shelter for the winter. They had been in the camp that Meggie called the Camp of Lost Giants for 5 days and 5 nights, when Doria and Luke returned from Ombra about midday, with news. It was obviously such bad news that Doria didn't even tell it to his brother, but went straight to the Black Prince's tent. A little later, the prince sent for Mo, and Batista assembled the men. Doria glanced at his strong brother before stepping into the circle of robbers, as if drawing courage from him to tell his news. But his voice was clear and firm when he began to speak. He sounded so much older than he was. The piper came out of the Wayless Wood yesterday, he began. He took the road that approaches Ombra from the west, burning and looting as he went, letting it be known everywhere that the milksop hasn't sent enough taxes to the Castle of Night, and he's here to collect more. How many men-at-arms are there with him? As usual, Snapper sounded brusque. Risa didn't like his voice. She didn't like anything about him. Doria seemed to like the man who had saved his life no better than she did, judging by the look he gave him.
A great many. More than us, far more, he added. I don't know the exact figure. The peasants whose houses they burned didn't have time to count them.
Even if they had had time, it wouldn't have been much use, would it? Replied Snapper. Everyone knows peasants can't count.
Gecko laughed, and with him some of the robbers who were always to be found near Snapper. Swindler, Grabber, the Charcoal Burner, Elfbane, and several more. Doria's lips tightened. He and the strong man were peasant-born, and Snapper knew it. His own father apparently had been a mercenary soldier.
Tell them what else you heard, Doria.
The Black Prince's voice sounded weary, as Risa had seldom heard it before. The boy glanced at his brother once more.
They're taking a head count of the children, he said. The piper is drawing up lists of all of them over 6 years old, and no more than 5 feet tall.
A murmur rose among the robbers, and Risa saw Mo leaning over to the prince to whisper something to him. How close to each other they seemed, and how naturally Mo sat there with the ragged robbers, as if he belonged to them as much as to her and Meggie. The Black Prince straightened up. His hair wasn't long now, as it had been when Risa had first met him. 3 days after Dustfinger's death, he had shaved his head, the custom in this world after the death of a friend. For on the third day, it was said, the souls of the dead entered the realm from which there was no return.
We knew the piper would be coming sometime, said the Black Prince. The adder could hardly have failed to notice that his brother-in-law was keeping most of the taxes he collects for himself. But as you've heard, the taxes aren't the only reason why he's coming. We all know only too well what they use children for in Argenta.
What do they use them for?
Meggie's voice sounded so clear among the voices of all the men. You couldn't tell from the sound of it that it had already changed this world several times by reading a few sentences.
What for? The tunnels in the silver mines are narrow, Blue Jay's daughter, replied Snapper. Be glad you're too large to be any use down there yourself.
The mines. Risa's hand went instinctively to the place where her unborn child was growing, and Mo glanced at her as if the same thought had struck him too.
Of course, the Adderhead has sent far too many children to the mines already. His peasants are beginning to resist. It seems the piper has only just put down a revolt.
Batista's voice sounded as weary as the prince's. There were too few of them to right all these wrongs.
The children die quickly down there, Batista went on. It's a marvel the adder hasn't thought of taking ours before. Children with no fathers, only defenseless unarmed mothers.
Then we'll have to hide them.
Doria sounded as fearless as only a boy of 15 can.
The way you hid the harvest.
Risa saw a smile appear on Meggie's lips.
Hide them? Oh, yes, of course. Snapper laughed with derision. A fabulous idea. Gecko, tell this greenhorn how many children there are in Umbra alone. He's a peasant's son, you know. Can't count.
The strong man was rising to his feet, but Doria cast him a warning glance, and his brother sat down again.
I can pick my little brother up with one hand, the strong man often said, but he's 100 times cleverer than me.
Gecko obviously had not the faintest notion how many children there were in Umbra, quite apart from the fact that he wasn't too good at counting himself.
Well, there are a lot, he faltered,
while the crow on his shoulder pecked at his hair, presumably hoping to find a few lice.
Flies and children. That's the only 2 things still in plentiful supply in Umbra.
No one laughed. The Black Prince remained silent, and so did everyone else. If the piper wanted those children, then he would take them. A fire elf settled on Risa's arm. She shook it off and found herself longing for Eleanor's house so much that her heart hurt as if the elf had burned it. She longed for the kitchen, always full of the humming of the oversized fridge, for Mo's workshop in the garden, and the armchair in the library where you could sit and visit strange worlds without getting lost in them.
Perhaps it's just bait, said Batista, breaking the silence. You know how the piper likes to leave bait lying around, and he knows very well that we can't simply let him take the children. Perhaps he he added, glancing at Mo. Perhaps he's hoping to catch the blue jay that way at last. Risa saw Meggie instinctively moving closer to Mo. But his face remained unmoved, as if the blue jay was someone else entirely.
Violante's already told me the piper would soon be coming here, said Mo, but she said nothing about children.
The blue jay's voice, the voice that had fooled the adderhead and beguiled the fairies, it did nothing of the kind to Snapper. It merely reminded him that he had once sat where the blue jay was sitting now, at the Black Prince's side.
You've been talking to her ugliness. Fancy that. So that's what took you to Umbra Castle, the blue jay in conversation with the adder's daughter.
Snapper twisted his coarse face into a grimace.
Of course she didn't tell you anything about the children. Why would she? Quite apart from the fact that we can assume she doesn't even know about it. Her ugliness has no more say than a kitchen maid about what goes on at the castle. That's how it always was, and that's how it always will be.
I've told you often enough, Snapper. The Black Prince spoke more sharply than usual. Violante has more power than you think, and more men too, even if they're all very young. He nodded to Mo. Tell them what happened at the castle. It's time they knew. Risa looked at Mo. What did the Black Prince know that she didn't?
Yes, come on, Blue Jay. Tell us how you got away unscathed this time.
Snapper's voice was so openly hostile now that some of the robbers exchanged uneasy glances.
It really does sound like enchantment. First, they let you out of the Castle of Night scot-free. Now you're out of Umbra Castle as well. Don't say you made the milksop immortal too in order to get away.
Some of the robbers laughed, but their laughter sounded uncomfortable. Risa was sure that many of them really did take Mo for some kind of enchanter, one of those men whose names were best spoken only in whispers, because they were said to know dark arts and could bewitch ordinary mortals with no more than a glance. How else was it possible for a man who had arrived as if from nowhere to be able to handle a sword better than most of them? And he could read and write as well.
"Folks say the Adderhead's immortality doesn't bring him much joy," objected the strong man.
Doria sat down beside him, his eyes fixed darkly on Snapper. No, the boy certainly didn't like his rescuer much. His friend Luke, on the other hand, followed Snapper and Gecko like a dog.
"So how does that help us? The Piper is looting and murdering worse than ever," Snapper spat. "The Adder is immortal. The milksop, his brother-in-law, hangs at least one of us almost every day. And the blue jay rides to Umbra and comes back unharmed."
All was very, very quiet once more. Many of the robbers felt that the deal that Blue Jay had done with the Adderhead in the Castle of Night was more than uncanny, even if ultimately Mo had tricked the Silver Prince. But the Adderhead was immortal all the same. Again and again, he enjoyed giving a sword to some man the Piper had captured and making him thrust it through his body, only to follow that up by wounding the attacker with the same sword and giving him enough time to die to attract the white women. That was the Adderhead's way of proclaiming that he no longer feared the Daughters of Death, although it was also said that he still avoided getting too close to them. "Death serves the Adder," was the inscription he had had placed in silver lettering above the gates of the Castle of Night. No, I was not required to make the milksop immortal. Mo's voice sounded cold as he replied to Snapper, very cold.
"It was Violante who got me safely out of the castle, after asking me to help her kill her father."
Risa placed her hand on her belly, as if to keep the words away from her unborn child. But in her mind, there was room for only one thought. "He's told the Black Prince what happened in the castle, but he didn't tell me. He didn't tell me." She remembered how hurt Meggie had sounded when Mo finally told them what he had done to the white book before giving it to the Adderhead.
"You moistened every 10th page. But you can't have done that. I was with you the whole time. Why didn't you say anything?"
Although Mo had kept her mother's whereabouts a secret from her all those years, Meggie still believed that in the last resort, he couldn't really have any secrets from her. Risa had never felt that. All the same, it hurt that he had told the Black Prince more than he'd told her. It hurt badly. Her ugliness wants to kill her father. Batista sounded incredulous.
What's so surprising about that?
Snapper raised his voice as if to speak for them all.
She's the adder's spawn. What reply did you give her, Blue Jay? Did you say you must wait until your damn book doesn't protect him from death anymore?
He hates Mo, thought Risa. He really hates him. But the look that Mo turned on Snapper was just as hostile. And Risa wondered, not for the first time, whether she simply used to overlook the anger in him, or whether it was as new as the scar on his chest.
The book will protect Violante's father for a long time yet, Mo sounded bitter. The Adderhead has found a way to save it.
Yet again, there was murmuring among the robbers. Only the Black Prince didn't seem surprised. So Mo had told him that too, had told him and not her.
He's turning into a different man, thought Risa.
The words are changing him. This life is changing him, even if it's only a game. If it's a game at all.
But that's impossible. If you left the pages damp, it will turn moldy. And you've always said yourself that mold kills books as certainly as fire.
Maggie sounded so reproachful.
Secrets. Nothing eats away at love faster.
Mo looked at his daughter.
That was in another world, Maggie, said his eyes.
But his mouth said something else.
Well, the Adderhead has taught me better. The book will go on protecting him from death, only if its pages stay blank.
No, thought Risa. She knew what was coming next, and she felt like putting her hands over her ears, although she loved nothing in the world more than Mo's voice. She had almost forgotten his face in all those years in Mortola's service, but she had always remembered his voice. Now, however, it no longer sounded like her husband's. It was the voice of the Blue Jay.
It doesn't take long to write 3 words. Mo did not speak loudly, but the whole Inkworld seemed full of his voice. It seemed to have belonged here forever, among the tall, towering trees, the ragged men, the drowsy fairies in their nests. The Adderhead still believes that only I can save the book. He'll give it to me if I go to him promising to cure it, and then some ink, a pen. It doesn't take more than a few seconds to write 3 words. Suppose Violante can gain those few seconds for me.
His voice painted the scene in the air, and the robbers listened as if they could see the whole thing before their eyes, until Snapper broke the spell.
You're out of your mind, totally out of your mind, he said hoarsely. I suppose by now you believe everything the songs say about you, how you're invulnerable, the invincible Blue Jay. Her ugliness will sell you, and her father will skin you alive if he gets his hands on you again. That won't take him much more than a few seconds. But your liking for playing the hero will cost all the rest of us our lives too.
Risa saw Mo's fingers close around the hilt of his sword. But the Black Prince laid a hand on his arm.
Maybe he'd have to play the hero less frequently if you and your friends did it more often, Snapper, he said.
Snapper rose to his feet, menacingly slowly, but before he could say anything, the strong man spoke up, quick as a child trying to settle his parents' quarrel.
Suppose the Blue Jay is right. Perhaps her ugliness really does want to help. She's always been good to us strolling players. She even used to come and visit our camp. And she feeds the poor and sends for the barn owl to come to the castle when the milksops had some unfortunate fellow's hand or foot chopped off.
Yes, very generous of her, isn't it?
Gecko made a mocking face, as he so often did when the strong man said anything, and the crow on his shoulder uttered a croak of derision.
What's so generous about giving away kitchen scraps and clothes no one wants any more? Does her ugliness go around in rags like my mother and my sisters? No, I expect Balbulus has run out of parchment, and she wants to buy more with the price on the Blue Jay's head.
Once again, some of the robbers laughed. As for the strong man, he looked uncertainly at the Black Prince. His brother whispered something to him and scowled at Gecko. Please, Prince, thought Risa. Tell Mo to forget what Violante said. He'll listen to you, and help him to forget the book he bound for her father, please. The Black Prince glanced at her, as if he had heard her silent pleading. But his dark face remained inscrutable. She often found Mo's face impossible to read these days, too. Doria, the prince said, do you think you can get past the castle guards and ask around among Violante's soldiers? One of them may have heard more about what the piper is here for. The strong man opened his mouth as if to protest. He loved his brother and did all he could to protect him. But Doria was at an age when a boy doesn't want protection anymore. Of course, easy, he said with a smile that showed how happy he was to do as the prince asked. I've known some of them ever since I could walk. Most aren't much older than me. Good, the Black Prince stood up. His next words were for Mo, although he didn't look at him. As for Violante's offer, I agree with Gecko and Snapper. Violante may have a soft spot for strolling players and feel sorry for her subjects, but she's still her father's daughter, and we ought not to trust her. All eyes went to the Blue Jay, but Mo said nothing. To Risa, that silence spoke louder than words. She knew it, just as Meggie did. Risa saw the fear on her daughter's face as she began talking earnestly to Mo. Yes, by now Meggie too probably felt what a hold this story had taken on her father. The letters were drawing him deeper and deeper down, like a whirlpool made of ink. And once again the terrible thought that had haunted Risa with increasing frequency these last few weeks came to her. That on the day when Mo had lain wounded, in Capricorn's burned-out fortress, close to death, perhaps the white women really did take a part of him away with them to the place where Dustfinger had gone. And she would see that part of him again only there, in the place where all stories end. Chapter 15. Loud Words, Soft Words.
Please, Mo, ask him.
At first, Meggie thought she had heard her mother's voice only in a dream, one of the dark dreams that sometimes came to her out of the past. Risa sounded so desperate. But when Meggie opened her eyes, she could still hear her voice. And when she looked out of the tent, she saw her parents standing among the trees only a short way off, little more than two shadows in the night. The oak against which Mo was leaning was huge, an oak such as Meggie had never seen outside the ink world. And Risa was clutching his arm as if to force him to listen to her.
Isn't that what we've always done? When one of us didn't like a story anymore, we closed the book. Mo, have you forgotten how many books there are? Let's find another to tell us its story, a book with words that will stay words and not make us a part of them.
Meggie glanced at the robbers lying under the trees only a little way off. Many of them were sleeping in the open, although the nights were already very cold. But her mother's despairing voice didn't seem to have woken any of them. If I remember correctly, I was the one who wanted to close this book long ago. Mo's voice sounded as cool as the air making its way in through the tent's ragged fabric. But you and Meggie wouldn't hear of another one.
How was I to know what this story would turn you into?
Risa's voice sounded as if she hardly knew how to hold back her tears. Go back to sleep, Meggie told herself. Leave the two of them alone. But she stayed where she was, freezing in the cold night air.
What are you talking about? What's it supposed to have made me into?
Mo spoke softly as if he didn't want to disturb the silence of the night, but Risa seemed to have forgotten where she was.
What's it made you into?
Her voice was rising with every word.
You wear a sword at your belt. You hardly sleep. You're out all night. Do you think I can't tell the cry of a real blue jay from a human imitation? I know how often Batista or the strong man came to fetch you when we were at the farm. And the worst of it is, I know how happy you are to go with them. You found you have a taste for danger. You went to Ombra, although the prince warned you not to, and now you come back after they almost caught you, and act as if it were all a game.
What else is it? Mo was still speaking so softly that Meggie could hardly hear him. Have you forgotten what this world is made of?
I couldn't care less what it's made of. You can die in it, Mo. You know that better than I do.
Or have you forgotten the white women? No, you even talk about them in your sleep. Sometimes I almost think you miss them.
Mo did not reply, but Maggie knew Risa was right. Mo had talked to her about the white women only once.
They're made of nothing but longing, Maggie, he had said. They fill your heart to the brim with longing, until you just want to go with them, wherever they take you.
Please, Mo, Risa's voice was shaking. Ask Fenolio to write us back again. He'll try to do it for you.
He owes you that.
One of the robbers coughed in his sleep. Another moved closer to the fire, and Mo said nothing. When at last he did reply, he sounded as if he were talking to a child. Even to Maggie he didn't speak like that.
Fenolio isn't writing at all these days, Risa. I'm not even sure whether he still can.
Then go to Orpheus. You've heard what Farid says. Orpheus has written rainbow-colored fairies into this world, and unicorns, and...
So, maybe Orpheus can add something to Fenolio's story here and there, but he'd have to write something of his own to take us back to Eleanor. I doubt if he can do that. And even if he can, from all Farid says, he's not interested in anything but making himself the richest man in Umbra. Do you have the money to pay him for his words?
This time, it was Risa who remained silent. For so long that she might have been mute again, as she was when she left her voice behind in the Inkworld. It was Mo who finally broke the silence.
Risa, he said, if we go back now, I'll be sitting in Eleanor's house doing nothing but wondering how this story goes on day in, day out, and no book in the world will be able to tell me that.
You don't just want to know how it goes on. Now it was Risa's voice that sounded cool. You want to decide what happens. You want to be part of it. But who knows whether you'll ever find your way out of the letters on the page again if you tangle yourself up in them even more?
Even more? What do you mean? I've seen death here, Risa, and I have a new life. If you won't do it for me.
Maggie could hear how hard it was for her mother to go on.
Then go back for Maggie, and for our second child. I want my baby to have a father. I want the baby's father to be alive when it's born, and I want him to be the same man who brought up its sister.
Once more, Maggie had to wait a long time for Mo's answer. A tawny owl hooted. Gecko's crows cawed sleepily in the tree where they roosted at night. Fenolio's world seemed so peaceful. And Mo stroked the bark of the tree against which he was leaning, as tenderly as he usually caressed the spine of a book.
How do you know Maggie doesn't want to stay? She's almost grown up, and in love. Do you think she wants to go back while Farid stays here? Because stay he will.
In love. Maggie's face was burning. She didn't want Mo to say what she herself had never put into words. In love. It sounded like a sickness without any cure. And wasn't that just how it sometimes felt?
Yes, Farid would stay. She had so often told herself that when she felt a wish to go back. Farid will stay even if Dustfinger doesn't return from the dead. He'll go on looking for him and longing for him much more than he longs for you, Maggie. But how would it feel never to see him again? Would she leave her heart here and go around with an empty hole in her breast ever after? Would she stay alone, like Eleanor, and only read about being in love in books?
She'll get over it, she heard Risa say. She'll fall in love with someone else.
What was her mother talking about? She doesn't know me, thought Maggie. She never knew me. How could she? She was never there with us.
What about your second child? Risa went on. Do you want the baby born in this world? Mo looked around him, and once more Maggie felt something she had long known. By now her father loved this world as much as she and Risa had once done. Perhaps he loved it even more.
Why not? He retorted. Do you want it born in a world where what it longs for can be found only in books?
Risa's voice shook when she replied, but now it was with anger.
How can you say such a thing? Everything you find here was born in our world. Where else did Fenolio get it all from?
How should I know? Do you really still think there's only one real world, and the others are just pale offshoots? Somewhere, a wolf howled, and two others responded. One of the guards came through the trees and put wood on the dying fire. His name was Wayfarer. None of the robbers went by the names they had been born with. He moved away again, after casting a curious glance at Mo and Risa.
I don't want to go back, Risa. Not now.
Mo's voice sounded determined, but at the same time Meggie could tell he was trying to win her mother over, as if he still hoped to convince her that they were in the right place.
It will be months yet before the baby's born, and maybe we'll all be back in Eleanor's house by then. But right now, this is where I want to be.
He kissed Risa on the forehead. Then he went away, over to the men standing guard among the trees at the far end of the camp. And Risa dropped into the grass, where she stood and buried her face in her hands. Meggie wanted to go to her and comfort her, but what could she say? I want to stay with Fareed, Risa. I don't want to find someone else. No, that would hardly be much comfort to her mother. And Mo didn't come back either. Chapter 16. The Piper's Offer.
At last, here they came. Trumpets rang out in a fanfare from the city gates, an arrogant, metallic sound.
Just like the man it announced, Fenolio thought. The milksop. The common people always found the most suitable names. He couldn't have thought of a better one himself. But then he hadn't invented this pallid upstart either. Not even the Adderhead had his arrival announced by long-stemmed trumpets. But his pigeon-chested brother-in-law had only to ride around the castle, and they struck up. Fenolio drew Minerva's children closer to his side. Despina didn't mind at all, but her brother wriggled out of Fenolio's grasp and climbed up, nimble as a squirrel, to a ledge on the wall where he would have a view down the street, along which they'd soon be coming. The milksop and his retinue, also known to the townsfolk as his pack of hounds. Had the adder's brother-in-law already been told that almost all the women of Umbra were waiting for him at the castle gate? Yes, surely. Why is the piper counting our children? That was the question that had brought them here. They had already called it out to the guards, whose faces were unmoved and who had merely lowered their spears in the direction of the angry women. But the women hadn't gone home all the same. It was Friday, the day when the hunt rode out, and the crowd had been waiting hours for the return of their new master, who from the moment of his arrival had set about killing all the game in the Wayless Wood. Once again his servants would be carrying dozens of blood-stained partridges, wild boar, deer, and hares through the streets of starving Umbra, past women who hardly knew where to find food for the next day. That was why Fenolio hardly ever went out of doors, and even less on Fridays than on any other day of the week. But curiosity had brought him here today. Curiosity, a tiresome feeling. Fenolio, Minerva had said, can you look after Despina and Ivo? I have to go to the castle. We're all going. We want to make them tell us why the piper is counting our children. You know why, Fenolio wanted to say. But the desperation on Minerva's face silenced him. Let them hope their children weren't wanted for the silver mines, he told himself. Leave it to the milksop and the piper to take their hope away. Oh, how tired he was of all this. He tried his hand at writing again yesterday, roused to anger by the arrogant smile with which the piper rode into Umbra. He had picked up one of the sharpened pens that the glass man still placed encouragingly in front of him, sat down in front of a blank sheet of paper, and after an hour of waiting in vain, told Rosenquartz off for buying paper that anyone could see was made of old trousers. Ah, Fenolio, he wondered, how many more stupid excuses will you think up for the way you've turned into an old man with no power over words any more? Yes, he admitted it. He wanted to be master of this story, strongly as he had denied it after Cosimo's death. More and more often these days, he set to work with pen and ink in search of the old magic, usually while the glass man was snoring in his fairy nest, because it was too embarrassing to have Rosenquartz as a witness of his failure. He tried it when Minerva had to give the children soup, tasting little better than dishwater,
when the horrible rainbow-coloured fairies jabbered away in their nest at the tops of their voices, keeping him awake, or when one of his creations, like the Piper yesterday, reminded him of the days when he had woven this world out of letters, intoxicated by his own skill with words. But the paper stayed blank, as if all the words had stolen away to Orpheus, just because he took them and savored them on his tongue. Had life ever tasted so bitter before? In Finolio's gloomy mood, he had even played with the idea of going back to that village in the other world, such a peaceful, well-fed place, so wonderfully free of fairies and stirring events, back to his grandchildren, who must be missing his stories. And what fabulous stories he'd be able to tell them now. But where could the words be found that would take him back? Certainly not in his empty old head. And he could hardly ask Orpheus to write them for him. He hadn't sunk as low as that yet. Despina tugged at his sleeve. Cosimo had given him the tunic he was wearing, but it too was moth-eaten now, and as dusty as his brain that wouldn't think. What was he doing here outside this damn castle? The sight of it depressed him. Why wasn't he lying in bed?
Finolio, is it true that when people dig silver out of the ground, they spit blood on it?
Despina's voice still reminded him of a little bird's.
Ivo says I'm just the right size for the tunnels where they find most of the silver.
Damn the boy. Why did he tell his little sister such stories?
How often have I told you not to believe a word your brother says?
Finolio tucked Despina's thick black hair back behind her ears and looked accusingly at Ivo. Poor fatherless little thing. Why shouldn't I? She asked me. Ivo was at the age when one despises even comforting lies. I don't expect they'll take you, he said, leaning down to his sister. Girls die too quickly. But they'll take me and Beppo and Lino and even Mungus, although he limps. The Piper will take us all. And then they'll bring us back dead, just like a... Despina put her hand over his mouth quickly, as if her father might come back to life if only her brother didn't speak the bad word. Finolio could happily have seized and shaken the boy, but Despina would only have burst into tears on the spot. Did all little sisters adore their brothers?
That's enough. Stop upsetting your sister, he snapped at Ivo. The Piper is here to catch the Blue Jay, not for anything else, and to ask the milksop why he isn't sending more silver to the Castle of Night.
Oh yes, then why are they counting us?
The boy had grown up in the last few weeks, as if grief had wiped away the childishness on his face. At the tender age of 10, Ivo was now the man of the family, even if Finolio sometimes tried to lift the burden of that responsibility off his thin shoulders. The boy worked with the dyers, helped to pull wet fabric through the stinking vats day in, day out, and brought the smell home with him in the evening. But he earned more with that work than Finolio did as a scribe in the marketplace.
They're going to kill us all, he went on, unmoved,
his eyes fixed on the guards, who were still pointing their spears at the waiting women.
And they'll tear the Blue Jay to pieces like they did last week with the strolling player who threw rotten vegetables at the governor. They fed the pieces to the hounds.
Ivo!
This was too much. Finolio tried to grab him by the ears, but the boy was too quick for him and ran away before he could get a hold. However, his sister stood there squeezing Finolio's hand as tightly as if there were nothing else for her to cling to in this shattered world.
They won't catch him, will they?
Despina's little voice was so timid that Finolio had to bend down to hear what she was saying.
The bear protects the Blue Jay now as well as the Black Prince, doesn't he?
Of course.
Finolio stroked her jet-black hair again. The sound of hoofbeats was coming up the street, echoing among the houses, with voices chatting as casually as if they scorned the silence of the women waiting there, while the sun sank behind the surrounding hills and turned the roofs of Umbra red. The noble lords were late coming back from the pleasures of the hunt today, their silver-embroidered garments spattered with blood, their bored hearts comfortably aroused by killing. Death could indeed be a great entertainer, when it was someone else's death. The women crowded closer together. The guards drove them back from the gates, but they stayed outside the castle walls. Old women, young women, mothers, daughters, grandmothers. Minerva was one of those in front. She had grown thin in the last few weeks. Finolio's story, that man-eating monster, was eating her alive. But Minerva had smiled when she heard that the Blue Jay had gone to see some books in the castle and ridden away unscathed.
"He will save us," she had whispered.
In the evenings, she sang, low-voiced, the songs going around Umbra, and very bad songs they were, about the White Hand and the Black Hand of Justice, the Jay and the Prince, a bookbinder and a knife-thrower against the Piper and his army of fire-raising men-at-arms. But why not? After all, didn't that sound like a good story? Finolio picked up Despina, as the soldiers escorting the hunting party strode by. Strolling players followed them down the street, pipers, drummers, jugglers, brownie tamers, and of course Sootbird, who wasn't going to miss any fun. Even if, so they said, he felt ill at the sight of people being blinded and quartered. Then came the hounds, dappled like the light in the wayless wood, with the kennel boys who made sure the dogs were hungry on the day of the hunt. And finally, the hunters, led by the milksop, a skinny figure on a horse much too large for him. He was as ugly as his sister was said to be beautiful, with a pointed nose that seemed too short for his face and a wide, pinched mouth. No one knew why the Adderhead had made him of all men Lord of Umbra. Perhaps it had been at the request of his sister, who after all had given the Silver Prince his first son. But Finolio suspected it was more likely that the Adderhead had chosen his puny brother-in-law because he could be sure the milksop would never rise against him.
"What a feeble character," thought Finolio scornfully,
as the milksop rode by with a supercilious expression on his face. Obviously, this story was now filling even leading roles with cheap supporting actors. As expected, the fine ladies and gentlemen had brought back plenty of game. Partridges dangling from the poles to which the grooms had tied them like fruit that had just fallen. Half a dozen of the deer he had thought up especially for this world, with reddish-brown coats that were still as dappled as a fawn's, even in old age. Not that these animals had been particularly old. Hares, stags, wild boars. The women of Umbra stared at the slaughtered game expressionlessly. Many put a telltale hand to their empty stomachs, or glanced at their ever-hungry children waiting in doorways for their mothers. And then they carried the unicorn past.
Damn that cheese face.
There were no unicorns in Finolio's world. But Orpheus had written one here, just so that the milksop could kill it. Finolio quickly put his hand over Despina's eyes. When they carried it by, its white coat pierced and bloodstained. Rosenquartz had told him not quite a week ago about the milksop's commission. The fee for it had been high, and all Umbra had wondered what distant country Four Eyes had brought that fairy tale creature from. A unicorn? What stories could have been told about it? But the milksop wasn't paying for stories, quite apart from the fact that Orpheus couldn't have written them. "He did it with my words," thought Finolio, "with my words." He felt fury clenched like a stone in his belly. If he only had the money to hire a couple of thieves to steal the book that supplied that parasite with words. His own book. Or if, at least, he could have written a few treasures for himself. But he couldn't manage even that. He, Finolio, formerly court poet to Cosimo the Fair and creator of this once magnificent world. Tears of self-pity came to his eyes, and he imagined them carrying Orpheus past, stabbed and bloodstained like the unicorn. Oh, yes.
"Why are you counting our children? We want you to stop it."
Minerva's voice brought Finolio out of his vengeful daydreams. When she saw her mother step in front of the horses, Despina wound her thin little arms so tightly around his neck that he could hardly breathe. Had Minerva lost her wits? Did she want her children to be not just fatherless, but motherless too? A woman riding just behind the milksop pointed her gloved finger at Minerva with her bare feet and shabby dress. The guards moved toward her with their spears.
"For heaven's sake, Minerva!"
Finolio's heart was in his mouth. Despina began crying, but it wasn't her sobs that made Minerva stumble back. Unnoticed, the Piper had appeared on the battlements above the gateway.
"You ask why we're counting your children?"
he called down to the women. As always, he was magnificently dressed. Even the milksop looked like a mere valet by comparison. He stood on the battlements, shimmering like a peacock, with four crossbowmen beside him. Perhaps he had been up there for some time, watching to see how his master's brother-in-law would deal with the women waiting for him. His hoarse voice carried a long way in the silence that suddenly fell on Umbra.
"We count everything that's ours," he cried. "Sheep, cows, chickens, women, children, men. Not that you have many of those left. Fields, barns, stables, houses. We count every tree in your forest. After all, the Adderhead likes to know what he's ruling over."
His silver nose still looked like a beak in the middle of his face. There were tales saying that the Adderhead had ordered a silver heart to be made for his herald too, but Fenolio felt sure there was still a human heart beating in the Piper's breast. Nothing was more cruel than a heart made of flesh and blood, because it knew what gives pain.
"You don't want them for the mines?"
The woman who spoke up this time did not step forward like Minerva, but hid among the others. The Piper did not answer at once. He examined his fingernails. The Piper was proud of his pink nails. They were as well manicured as a woman's, just as Fenolio had described them. In spite of everything, it was still exciting to see his characters acting exactly as he had imagined. "You soak them in rose water every evening, you villain," thought Fenolio, as Despina stared at the Piper like a bird staring at the cat that wants to eat it. "And you wear them as long as the nails of the ladies who keep the milksop company."
"For the mines. What a delightful idea."
It was so quiet now that the silver-nosed man didn't even have to raise his voice. In the setting sun, his shadow fell over the women long and black. Very effective, Fenolio thought. And how stupid the milksop looked. The Piper was keeping him waiting outside his own gates like a servant. What a scene. But this one wasn't his own invention.
"Ah, I understand. You think that's why the Adderhead sent me here."
The Piper leaned his hands on the wall and looked down from the battlements like a beast of prey, wondering whether the milksop or one of the women would taste better.
"No, no, I'm here to catch a bird, and you all know the color of its feathers. Although, as I hear, he was black as a raven during his last impudent exploit. As soon as that bird is caught, I'll be riding back to the other side of the forest. Isn't that so, Governor?"
The milksop looked up at him and adjusted his sword, still bloodstained from the hunt.
"If you say so,"
he called in a voice that he could control only with difficulty. He glanced angrily at the women outside the gates, as if he'd never seen anything like them before.
"I do say so."
The Piper smiled condescendingly down on the milksop.
"But on the other hand," he said,
and the pause before he continued seemed endless.
"If this bird should escape capture once more..."
He paused again for a long time, as if he wanted to inspect each of the waiting women thoroughly.
"If any of those present should go so far as to give him shelter and a roof over his head, warn him of our patrols, sing songs of how he pulls the wool over our eyes..."
The sigh he heaved came from the depths of his breast.
"Well, in that case, no doubt I'd have to take your children with me in his place, for after all, I can't go back to the Castle of Night empty-handed, can I?"
Oh, the confounded silver-nosed bastard.
"Why didn't you make him more stupid, Fenolio?" "Because stupid villains are so boring," he answered himself, and was ashamed of it when he saw the despair on the women's faces.
"So you see, it's entirely up to you."
The strained voice still had something of the slushy sweetness for which Capricorn had loved it so much.
"Help me to catch that bird that the Adderhead longs to hear singing in his castle, and you can keep your children."
otherwise.
He wearily signed to the guards, and the milksop, his face rigid with fury, rode toward the gates as they opened.
Otherwise, I'm afraid I'll have to remember that there is indeed always a need for small hands in our silver mines.
The women were still staring at him with faces as empty of emotion, as if there simply were no room in them for yet more despair.
What are you still standing there for?
Called the piper, as the servants carried the milksop's dead game through the gateway below.
Go away, or I'll have boiling water poured over you. Not a bad idea at all, since I'm sure you could all do with a bath.
As if numbed, the women moved back, looking up at the battlements as though the cauldrons were already heating up. The last time Fenolio's heart had raced like this was when the soldiers had appeared in Balbulus's workshop to take Mortimer away with them. He examined the faces of the women, the beggars crouching beside the pillory outside the castle walls, the frightened children, and fear spread through him. All the rewards set on Mortimer's head had not yet been able to buy the Silver Prince an informer in Umbra, but what now? What mother would not betray the Blue Jay for her own child's sake? A beggar pushed his way through the crowd of women, and as he limped past, Fenolio recognized him as one of the Black Prince's spies.
Good, he thought. Mortimer will soon know about the deal the piper has offered the women of Umbra. But then what?
The milksop's hunting party was moving on through the open castle gates, and the women set off for home, heads lowered, as if already ashamed of the act of betrayal the piper had demanded of them.
Fenolio?
A woman stopped in front of him. He didn't know who she was until she pushed back the scarf that she had tied over her pinned-up hair like a peasant woman.
Risa, what are you doing here?
Fenolio instinctively looked around in alarm, but Mortimer's wife had obviously come without her husband.
I've been looking for you everywhere.
Despina clung around Fenolio's neck and stared curiously at the strange woman.
That lady looks like Maggie,
she whispered to him.
Yes, because she's Maggie's mother.
Fenolio put Despina down as Minerva came toward him. She was walking slowly, as if she felt dizzy, and Ivo ran to her and put his arm protectively around her.
Fenolio,
Risa took his arm.
I have to speak to you.
What about? It couldn't be anything good.
Minerva, you go ahead, he said. It will be all right. Wait and see,
he added. But Minerva just looked at him as if he were one of her children. Then she took Despina's hand and followed her son, who was running on ahead. She walked as unsteadily as if the piper's words were splinters of glass under her feet.
Tell me your husband is hidden deep, deep in the forest, and not planning any more idiocy like that visit to Balbulus,
Fenolio whispered to Risa as he led her away with him into Baker's Alley. It still smelled of fresh bread and cake there, a tormenting aroma for most of the people of Umbra, who hadn't been able to afford such delicacies for a long time. Risa covered her hair with the scarf again and looked around as if she were afraid the piper had come down from the battlements and was following her. But only a thin cat slunk past. Once there had been a great many pigs in the streets, too, but they had been eaten long ago, most of them up at the castle.
I need your help.
Good God, how desperate she sounded. You must write us home again.
You owe us that. It's your songs that have put Mo in danger, and it's getting worse every day. You heard what the piper said.
Stop, stop, stop.
He blamed himself often enough these days, but Fenolio still didn't like to be blamed by others. And this accusation really was surely unjust.
I never brought Mortimer here. Orpheus did. I really couldn't foresee that my inspiration for the Blue Jay would suddenly be walking around here in flesh and blood.
But it happened.
One of the night watchmen who lit the lanterns was coming down the street. Darkness fell fast in Umbra. Another banquet would soon be beginning in the castle, and Sootbird's fire would stink to high heaven.
If you won't do it for me,
said Risa, doing her best to sound composed, but Fenolio could see the tears in her eyes.
Then do it for Maggie,
and the brother or sister she's soon going to have.
Another child?
Fenolio instinctively glanced at Rhys's belly, as if he could already see a new character in the story there. Was there no end to its complications?
Fenolio, please.
What was he to say in reply? Should he tell her about the sheet of paper still lying blank on his table? Or even admit that he liked the way her husband played the part he had written for him? That the Blue Jay was his sole comfort in these dark days, the only one of his ideas that worked really well?
No, better not. Did Mortimer send you?
She avoided his eyes.
Rhysa, does he want to leave too?
Leave this world of mine, he added in his thoughts. My world, still magnificent, even if it's in a certain amount of turmoil at the moment. For yes, Fenolio knew only too well that he himself still loved it, despite its darkness. Perhaps because of its darkness. No, that wasn't why. Or was it?
He must leave. Can't you see that?
The last of the daylight was fading from the streets. The buildings stood very close together, and it was cold and as still as if all Umbra were thinking of the Piper's threat. Shivering, Rhysa drew her cloak around her.
Your words, they're changing him.
Oh, come on. Words don't change anyone.
Fenolio's voice sounded louder than he had intended.
Maybe my words have taught your husband things about himself he never knew before. But they were there all the time, and if he likes them now, you can hardly call it my fault. Ride back. Tell him what the Piper offered. Say he'd better avoid anything like that visit to Balbulus in the near future. And for God's sake, don't worry. He's playing his part very well. He plays it better than any of the other characters I made up, except maybe the Black Prince. Your husband is a hero in this world. What man wouldn't wish for that?
The way she was looking at him, as if he were an old fool who didn't know what he was talking about. You know very well how heroes end up, she said, carefully controlling her voice. They don't have wives or children, and they don't grow old. Find yourself another man to play the hero in your story, but leave my husband out of it. You must write us all back. Tonight. He hardly knew where to look. Her gaze was so clear, just like her daughter's. Meggie had always looked at him like that. A candle flared into life in the window above them. His world was sinking into darkness. Night was falling. Close the curtains. Tomorrow the story will go on.
I'm sorry, but I can't help you. I'll never be able to write again. It brings nothing but misfortune. And there's enough of that here already.
What a coward he was. Too cowardly for the truth. Why didn't he tell her that the words had abandoned him, that she was asking the wrong man? But Rhysa seemed to know it anyway. He saw so many emotions mingled on her face. Anger, disappointment, fear, and defiance.
Like her daughter, thought Fenolio again.
So uncompromising, so strong. Women were different, no doubt about it. Men broke so much more quickly. Grief didn't break women. Instead, it wore them down. It hollowed them out very slowly. That was what it was doing to Minerva. Very well. Rhysa was in control of her voice, although it shook. Then I'll go to Orpheus. He can write unicorns into this world. He brought us all here. Why shouldn't he be able to send us home again, too?
If you can pay him, thought Fenolio, but he didn't say it aloud.
Orpheus would send her packing. He saved his words for the ladies and gentlemen in the castle, who paid for his expensive clothes and his maids. No, she'd have to stay, and so would Mortimer and Meggie. And a good thing, too, because who else was going to read his words, supposing they did obey him again some day? And who was to kill the Adderhead, if not the Blue Jay? Yes, they had to stay. It was better that way.
Off you go to Orpheus, then, he said, and I wish you luck with him.
He turned his back to her, so that he wouldn't have to see the despair in her eyes any longer. Did he detect a trace of contempt there, too?
But you'd better not ride back in the dark, he added. The roads are more dangerous every day.
Then he left her. Minerva would be waiting with supper. He didn't turn back. He knew only too well how Risa would be gazing after him. Exactly like her